Before I go to the quote of the week, first, a word of experience. You know what? The only thing I found from my experience, the only thing worse in a virtue signaling world than telling people they're full of BS is to actually prove it. I've got the angry emails, the texts, the posts over the years to prove it, which brings me to the quote of the week, courtesy of Lynn Alden, founder of Lynn Alden Investment Strategy. She's one of my favorite macro investment analysts. In quotes, ESG investing in its current form is similar to people who take selfies of themselves in fancy locations to show that they were there while barely experiencing it for real, mostly theater, little substance, end of quote. Well, I appreciate that many people, like the whatever 30,000 plus who attended COP26 in Glasgow, and that includes 277 strong Canadian contingent, well, they're going to immediately say, hey, well, that's not me. But then again, for all the words, promises, and money spent, you got to remember what Canada's Commissioner of the Environment concluded, and that no country in the G7 had done less to reducing emissions. But boy, did we talk about it. Of course, Canada doesn't have a monopoly on that kind of empty talk. I mean, look at the world of finance. As EcoBusiness reports, out of 253 funds that switched to an ESG focus in 2020, 87% rebranded by adding such words as sustainable or ESG or green or climate to their names, but none of them changed their stock or bond holdings at that point. And let me just give you one more example of the climate game. Countries like Canada, the US, you know, Western Europe, we outsource a huge amount of our manufacturing of consumer goods to countries like China, whose main source of energy is coal. So they do the manufacturing, they rack up the emissions, we don't, but come on, it's only because we offshored our manufacturing, because we're not producing those goods, but we're sure consuming them. But the emissions happen all the same, so global emissions don't change. In fact, they're worse, because we've done that, but we sort of pat ourselves on the back for reducing our emissions. Anyway, it's a big story, a big subject, as you know. But I thought Lynn Alden's quote, I think, just nails it. You know, ESG investing in its current form is similar to people who take selfies of themselves in fancy locations to show they were there while barely experiencing it for real. Mostly theater, little substance. Time now for the shocking stat of the week. You know, reforming healthcare has always been what's called the third rail of politics, i.e. no politician touches it for fear of ending their political career. Opponents can just jump all over that. You're trying to limit people's access, whatever they'll say. But that seems to happen no matter how dismally the system performs. I mean, most recently, we were ranked 10th out of 11 developed nations in the Commonwealth Healthcare Index, or we've ranked dead last on things like access to timely care. And it's also despite facts like 308 people died waiting for treatment in the Vancouver region. It's called the Fraser Health Region in 2019. 308 people died waiting for treatment, but we don't want to change anything. Much worse now with all the cancellations, by the way, of surgeries or other treatments due to the closures, you know, because of COVID. I mean, no kidding. But no politician wants to touch healthcare reform, especially if it involves the private sector, which is absurd. Keep in mind, all doctors' offices are already private. Vast majority of walk-in clinics, variety of services from seeing a GP at one of those clinics to an X-ray. Of course, other healthcare services too, like physiotherapy, dentistry, optometrists, all private. But still the mention of the word private healthcare and public healthcare in the same sentence, well, you'd think the world was coming to an end. And one more. This is despite after hearing a year of evidence in the Shuili Supreme Court case. Justices McLaughlin, Major, and Bastarache concluded in quotes, a year of evidence. And they said, the evidence refutes the government's theoretical contention that a prohibition on private insurance is linked to maintaining quality health care. But that may be about to change, which brings me to my shocking stat. Now, this is the results of a Leger poll done for SecondStreet.org. The poll found that 62% of Canadians now either strongly support or support allowing Canadians to spend their own money after tax dollars for healthcare services at private clinics. Opposed, only 27%. 12% didn't know. Well, that's up a good 22% from before the pandemic. You know, ironically, the greatest support is in British Columbia. 71% support us having the right to spend our after-tax dollars to get medical treatment. While the BC government, by the way, ironically, the same time is spending millions in legal fees, And reports say they're using every trick in the book to prevent people from using their after-tax dollars in clinics like the Cambie Street Surgery Center. Despite the fact that clinic originated with the support of the NDP government to treat, in the private clinic, injured unionized workers. Anyways, we also got, by the way, federal prisoners, members of the military, the RCMP. They can all use private clinics at taxpayer expense. Here's the other one, though. A further 67% support provincial governments hiring private clinics to provide surgeries and health procedures to Canadians so we can reduce those waiting lists. 67% supported, only 18% opposed it. My bet is that anyone who suffered or waiting for treatment, had their quality of life dramatically reduced, will be saying hallelujah to the possibilities of reducing those wait times thanks to integrating the private sector with the public sector, just like every other Western country in the world. Time now for this week's Goofy Award, and it's a serious one. Let me first remind you that taxpayers put up something like $600 million into a media fund, which distributes the money to various media outlets. Although, you know what? We don't still know how those outlets are chosen or how do they qualify to receive those taxpayer funds because the government refuses to tell us. In addition, taxpayers also fork over about $1.4 billion to the CBC. And we got the government talking about adding hundreds of millions more to that subsidy when the CBC, if and when, they drop advertising. Well, they may not have to wait long given how fast advertising revenue at the CBC has been dropping. So why are taxpayers putting up so much money? Well, in the prime minister's words and quotes, we recognize how important it is to support our strong, independent media and to encourage journalists to continue to hold those in power here and around the world to account. That's the context for today's Troubling Goofy Award. This week, in a recorded Zoom call, the Bank of Canada managers discussed what amounts to a press enemies list that specifically mentioned BlackRock's reporter. The director of communications for the Bank of Canada governor, Tiff Macklin, his name is Paul Batterster, is recorded saying in quotes, "I do not want to be in a situation where we're allowing BlackRock's to be asking us." At first, the Bank of Canada employees denied actually that conversation took place. But as I mentioned, the call had been recorded. So later in the week, they owned up to it. The Bank of Canada's governor, the director of communications, said blacklisted media outlets like BlackRock's were prohibited from questioning the central bank, while friendly reporters may call for tips on how to cover the news. And when asked directly about the media enemies list, well, he had no comment. Well, let me first say that BlackRock's reporter provides a brilliant service for us in the public because they're relentless in covering federal communications, committee meetings, documents, federal court. I mean, it's a long list. And it's a small group of reporters led by Holly Doan who've broken countless stories in the public interest. I personally subscribe to BlackRock's reporter because they report on so many stories I can't find elsewhere, including the one I'm talking about right now. Playing favorites with softball reporters while blacklisting others, that should be a huge story for all journalists and members of the public. You know what? It makes me think of those 90 or so press conferences held by the prime minister at the outset of the pandemic, where his office was allowed to approve which journalists could ask questions. That's outrageous. Play ball with the government or get ignored. And again, it was not a major story, which further fuels, I think, the public cynicism, erodes trust in the mainstream media, while allowing critics to suggest that the lack of coverage of the story may come back to government funding. So why so little coverage? Well, I don't know. But I do know this, to restore credibility to the coverage of the central bank, you know what? I think the director of communications should be let go. If that's all the time we have for this week's show, I just again want to remind you to go to mikesmoneytalks.ca, click on the events tickets. The countdown is on. Looking forward to getting a raft of recommendations from our all-star panel and analysts. And also remind you to go to Money Talks tweets. Why you are not signed up for that is beyond me. You should follow it or Michael Campbell's Money Talks or going regularly to mikesmoneytalks.ca. We talk about stories that you're not reading elsewhere. There's dozens produced every week. I don't care what opinion you have in the end. I do think the more information that you have, the different perspectives that you consider, the better we're off as a country, as you have a more informed opinion. But in the meantime, I hope you have a terrific week.